writer left a great deal of time on your hands. His articles finished and no deadlines to meet, Harold was pretty much his own boss. He could spend the next several days working on the bed. It would take that. Accumulated paint and varnish would have to be removed, not to mention just plain old dirt caked on, baked in, and tough to get off. But it was a labor of love. Harold and Betty could see that what they had bought was really a masterpiece created at the hands of some craftsman who loved his work. And as they worked, determined to pay as much attention to the detail of the bed and the restoration as the craftsman had paid while making it, neighbors dropped by. First, old Silas, the mailman. Silas had lived in Fairhaven all his life and had never left. I take it back. He once went up to Northwood Narrows, New Hampshire, for a summer festival. He was too old now for the country route in the area, but he still handled the village mail and walked the route every day, priding himself on the fact that he had never missed a day. Neither rain, nor storm, nor dark of night. How's it go, Silas? Silas wheezed and hacked at his asthma and hunkered on an old anvil that stood beside the bed.
Heard about the bed.
I'll bet you have,
thought Harold. And he watched as Silas settled his spindly shanks on the hard contours of the anvil. Harold knew that he was in for a session, so he slid to the ground to get comfortable, welcoming the break.
Bed belonged to a sea captain.
Silas started and continued to weave the history of the fine piece of furniture in the harsh, nasal sounds of rocky New England. The bed had belonged to a sea captain who had married a beautiful village girl. All of Fairhaven attended the wedding, and all of Fairhaven was witness as the bed was borne from the wagon by the men of the wedding party, draped with festive decorations and carried ceremoniously into the house they would live in.
Returning from months at sea, the captain had found his wife in the arms of another. Enraged, he killed them both, then plunged his knife into his own grief-stricken heart.
And so it began. Harold leaned forward appreciatively as Silas spun the tale.
Bed was put in storage in the same house. House was vacant. Vacant many years.
A crotchety wheeze caught at his chest, and Harold waited impatiently for the story to continue.
Rich fella bought it. Found the old bed in an attic.
The rasping wheeze of the old man's voice weaved a spell around Harold, who by now had been joined by his wife, Betty, with coffee, which Silas gratefully accepted and spiced from a small flask he carried on his hip.
Medicinal purposes.
He slyly smiled.
Rich fella bought the house, found the bed, dusted it, slept in it, got killed in it. There's a sword hanging over the bed. There more than 20 years. One day, one fine, bright New England morning, the rich fella doesn't come down to breakfast. Family investigates, finds him impaled on the mattress by the sword, which has been attached to the wall behind the bed more than 20 years. The sword had fallen from its hangings, pierced the man's neck like a railroad spike, nailed him soundlessly to the bed. Not a sound came from the room prior to their investigation. Now, no sound would come from it, except the muffled sobbings of the bereaved family who had toyed with the fates.
According to Silas,
the bed was put back in storage, the house sold by the widow, and boarded up by the local agents.
It lay vacant for many years, with its hideous bed in repose, well back in the attic on the third floor. An occasional drunk would pass the time there, but no one ever lived there again. Mute, and now blind with the boards nailed across the shutters, no light was admitted, and none was wanted. The mansion grieved over its misfortune, and like a fallen woman, the gee-jaws, the paint, the gingerbread, all flaked and fell and sagged and became haggard and old and ugly.
Local kids, Local kids, they knew all about the bed and the superstition that surrounded it. The mansion and the horrors that dwelt there, imagined or real, became part of the local boy's initiation rites. To spend the night there was to prove your manhood. One especially adventurous group decided that to spend the night there was not enough. To spend the night in the old mansion on the third floor where the bed was, that was something else. That was proof you weren't afraid. Enter the house through the cellar window. Brush the cobwebs from your face.
A small spidery web so gossamer until one meets you in the face and then you'll smother. Up from the cellar, stumbling, falling over the decay that had torn the mansion apart. Crashing into things and one another. Nervous laughter, insane bouts of giggles that had them in tears. Approach the steps. They lead to the third floor. Last one up's a rotten egg. A tumultuous rush from the first floor to the second to the third. But the rush is halted as the stamping causes a landing to give way. And a young man's leg plunges through a rotted timber, narrowly avoiding a two-story fall to the main foyer below. Slowly now, slowly, no accidents. Caution dictates that they go slowly. And finally they reach the third floor of the old house. The place stands naked and old and utterly beaten. Vandals, lightning, whatever, have caused a piece of the roof to collapse. And the elements have found their way in. And years of rain and snow and harsh New England weather have gouged the beauty from the place and replaced it with decay.
Scurrying noises meant the presence of rats, and the shaft of moonlight that fights its way through the low-lying cloud cover strikes the irises of the barman, and they rattle through a hole followed by a piece of wood. One of the boys had chunked at it. The nightless light of the moon has shown them a stark apparition in the attic as well.
The boys have heard of it.
Boys have heard of it.
But they have never seen it.
They know what has gone on before because of it. And it stands before them. Defiant. Dust and cobwebs. It stands before them defiant. Rats and moonlight. It's only occupants. Stands before them defiant. And the boy, a bold boy, steps toward it. His pride, masculine deeds at stake.
Feigning a broad yawn, he says,
"Need a little nap."
And he stretches himself across the bed. His fear gnaws urgently at his gut. And a wave of his hand is enough to silence the protest of the other boys.
Tension runs through the room like an electrical current. The only short-circuited now when the boy in the bed makes an exaggerated snarling noise. Relief floods through the boys, and laughing, they jump on the bed and wrestle. The bed crumbles, its shudders communicated to the house with the noisy tumbling boys rolling across the bed. Now, the sleeper, the object of all this merriment, opens his eyes in time to see it. It's the last thing he'll ever see. A jagged piece of lumber, a veteran of the broken roof, of bird's nests, rat nests, and gnawing barnum, teeters, sways, plunges downward into the chest of the staring boy, rocking his eyes far back into his head. Only the whites of his shirt and the red of his blood as it streams from the coarse, gaping maw of the wound. Was listed as an accident, but the villagers know better.